Yeah, can you get that attached back?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Got it?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's, tell us on tape about the broom.
Well, that's a straw broom there that I'm giving you that you just ring it out in the woods and in old layout fields. Mm-hmm. And you take your knife and work the bottom, all the fodder off the bottom of it. And and you just take a regular cord and put it together. And that's the brooms we was raised with. We didn't have no bolt brooms. We just had brooms like that. And for the scrub broom, we had a 2x10. About 14 inches long, with holes bored in it. We'd take and put shucks in it, corn shucks, and we'd twist them and bring it up through there, and that's what we'd scrub the house with. Mm-hmm. Because back then there wasn't no rugs. Now, I'm going to tell you that the people just wasn't able to buy no rugs, and the house was scrubbed once a week, see. And some of the prettiest, whitest floors you ever seen in your life, it'd take sand and go out and get coarse sand and potash soap, and scrub them floors, even to the blocks that the wood stove set up on, and just scrub to the just pure shine. Mm-hmm. That clean. That's how clean they were. And
why do you still make the old kind of brooms?
Why? Uh-huh. Well, I just hope my mother brings so many of them, and they several old people in the community, and if I run across one, why, I know they'd like to have one, and they're not able to get out and get them, and I make them to give away,
well,
to my friends and neighbors in the community, see? Mm-hmm. And, I can get enough straw in a half a day to make 30 or 40 brooms or more. Just I don't get that many. I just keep a few on hand. If I want to give one away, I got them, see? And, we don't use one here in the house. We got a bolt broom that we sweep with here in the house. But these old people that was raised with them, sweat with them every day, they like to have one. Mm-hmm. And we like to kind of hand them a broom and let them know we still think about them. And mm-hmm. We're not people that like to throw our old people away or put them off somewhere and forget them, see? Mm-hmm. And I'll take a day or two, I'd say a couple of days out in a month, I'd go around and carry food to some of the old people and this, that, and the other. But
That's interesting that you give somebody a broom because it makes them feel more, you know, because it's something that
secure. Yeah, something they used to. And if I go to a arts and craft show, mm-hmm. Now, I'll tell you where there's a good one at. It's down in Mayo. They have a Pioneer Day in Mayo, Florida, in Lafayette County, mm-hmm. in the fall of the year, kind of. And if I go there, there's some ladies that knows how to make these old-fashioned bonnets. Uh-huh. I buy some of those bonnets and bring back. I don't know too many people around here that could make a bonnet like these ladies used to wear in the field and all. And every once in a while, I'll hand out a bonnet. Mm-hmm. And this, they'll sit and talk about it, and they'll be so appreciative to it, these old ladies, and you know. Mm-hmm. And they're so glad that somebody will come along and sit down and talk to them a little while, see. Mm-hmm.
Are there any other kinds of, you know, things that you used to make and that you still do make, you know, sort of the homemade tools and things that you use around the house or that you'd use on a farm?
No. You see, all this stuff, we've still got our old mule plows and things, but all this stuff is really mechanized. Mm-hmm. Now, if you had a Bellus and a blacksmith deal and all, you could sharpen your plows for the tractors and all, but no more than you hardly get a sweep on a tractor cultivator for a day or two to run, it's wore out, see, and you hardly ever wear one out with a mule, see. And this thing is so mechanized now, and that's what I was telling you about a while ago, from I've seen more happen since 45, since I come back on the farm, than my grandfather and my daddy did in all the years, over 100 years that both lived. See? You've got to be a mechanic. You've got to be a engineer. And you got to be a land surveyor, because you got to know how many acres you're going to plant. The government's going to keep you on acres. You got to be a veterinarian. You got
to
for your cattle and hogs. You got to know how much. You got to be a laboratory technician. You got to know how much, how to calibrate a sprayer and put a quart of this or a pint of this to the acre. Chemicals. You got to.
Is this the kind? Do you think that farming has really changed? Do a lot more people do things by reading instructions than? Than when you were coming up, when people
yes. Now, you just can't go out there and this herbicides and insects. You can't go out there and handle that stuff like we could. We didn't have it back then when kerosene and mothballs all we had to fight boat we with before we went on service. See, but you can't go out there with this high technology stuff that we got now and say a half a pint of it to an acre and it'll kill everything out there. You can't be too particular with this stuff. You got to know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Because what I'm thinking is, as you're talking to me, I'm thinking, you know, back in even when you were coming up and when folks didn't have too much written education.
No.
That you had to learn from what your father did before you.
My father learned me how to lay off a row. My father learned me how to set up an old planter to plant corn. All this stuff, see, but now you got to have books to read them 4-row planters, and you got to have books to tell you how much of furadane to put down with the seed to keep the worms from eating it up, and how much of this to put, and what not to put, and when to put it, and where to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Lord, honey, I'm telling you what truth, it'll you about run you ragged around sometimes just keeping all this stuff in your mind, see.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like somehow it was easier to farm back ways, or is it just different?
Physically, no. Mm-hmm. Mentally, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, physically, you have to walk and walk and walk all day long with behind a mule.
Uh-huh.
And you had to plow those peanuts up and shake them by hand and set them up on them, put the nuts up in there and set them up out in the field. That afternoon, go back and put them in stacks and shock them with it, and let them stay 3 weeks cure out before you can pick them. Now you just go out through there and with a plier upper, and you plow them up and you invert them all as you go, and you're turning the roots up in the air. 90% of the nuts are setting up on the dirt, and the tops are laying on the dirt. 3 days you back there and putting them on a wagon, and 24 hours you got them dried and going to the mill with them. See? Just a regular clockwork. Just man, they just work you half, two-thirds to death, you know, getting a crop out. And back then, why, you just, whole month of July back there with mules, you didn't have nothing to do because you laid by and there wasn't nothing ready to gather.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean to lay by?
To get on plowing. You plow a crop as much as it needs plowing, and then you quit, see? See what I'm saying? When you start breaking your land and preparing your land in January, and you plant it in March, and you work it March, April, and May, and June, and July, you've done plowing that corn because you could get all kind of roasting ears out in the corn, out in the field, see? And then you just didn't have nothing to do. The month of July and August, you started gathering peanuts,
mm-hmm.
See?
Well, what did people used to do?
In July? They have revivals, meetings at church. Now, in our community, that's what they'd have. They'd have revivals, and some people go fishing and help with the meals by catching fish, messes of fish, and things of that nature. But after you follow the mule, say January, February, March, April, and May, and June, well, you was ready to sit down and rest a little bit.
Sounds like you needed vacation.
You needed something, yeah. But nobody don't never know, couldn't even imagine how your feet would hurt, ache, how you would hurt from plowing them mules. And especially if you got one that didn't want to walk where you ought to walk, see? And you couldn't make him walk where you ought to.
Those are famous for that.
And the other, they're hard-headed, see? But now these tractors, you make them tractors go where you want them to go. And the only thing about it, you sitting down on your bottom all day long on a tractor, see?
So it's your bottom that hurts.
Your bottom it hurts, yeah, see? Instead of your legs.
Well, if you had a mule that didn't go where you wanted it to go, what would you do with him? How would you get him to do what you wanted?
How? Well, one way I'd get somebody to go along when I'd say gee, and if she didn't move over there, he'd have a long whip, and then he'd hit her on the left side. See? And you can get a warper but two or three times before she'd start geeing when you said gee, see? And haw, gee, and haw was right and left, see? But the older a mule got, the more they learned. See, but some of them was a little Mustang mules, and they would never learn nothing. They just walk. And I never would plow a horse, so. Mm-hmm. Old big-footed horse, they'd stomp on more stuff, and you could get planted. See, they'd old big feet. And
I always wondered about that, why people use mules instead of horses to plow with.
You start trying to hook a horse up, and she just prances you, just stomping, just here and on, you know. Mm-hmm. And she'd be stomped down dozen hills of corn before you can get her hooked up. Mm-hmm. See?
And mules have smaller feet.
Yeah, smaller feet. And they just could stand more than a horse, too. Mm-hmm. See? We had three mules, and we was considered a big farmer. Mm-hmm. And then, like, starved to death. And we made a lot of stuff for a mule farmers, you know, back then. We made a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And still, we, like, starved to death. Mm-hmm. I hate to even think of them times.
It's because they were hard times.
They sure was. Mm-hmm. To think how much money there was in this country, and then there's people having to go through such stuff as that. Mm-hmm. You see?
Mm-hmm. Did your mother do things like quilting? Did people make quilts?
My mother quilted. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. They'd gather and they'd quilt. And I can quilt a shell as pretty as anybody.
You can?
I can. I hope my mother quilt. Yeah, I can quilt. Mm-hmm. I'd help her put in a quilt.
What were her favorite patterns?
Well, she'd just piece them up together, and she'd just quilt. Just anything we had to make a top out of, she'd make a quilt. Anything to keep us warm. Mm-hmm. See?
And what kind of a frame did she use?
She used four 1x2 strips. Mm-hmm. See? And she'd quilt them shells out, and she'd roll that up and tie it off, and then quilt that shell and roll it up and tie it off. And then when she got it done, she basted it all the way around, you know. Mm-hmm. And
was it on a frame, on a horizontal frame, or how did
a square frame, about the size of the bed. She would nail four pieces of wires up in the house, in the room, front room of the house. Mm-hmm. And we'd take, back then they had plenty of baling wire, see, and we just put it in that staple and bring it down here and just have, let the quilt down here where you could sit in the chair to it, see.
So she hung it from?
Top of the house. Mm-hmm. And when she got ready to go cook dinner, she'd just take that wire and wrap that quilt. You could walk under it, see, mm-hmm. all the way around. Then she got ready to sit down, somebody come in and help her quilt. She'd just let it back, let the wire back down, and she'd just have it right there in her lap again, see, and go at it again.
Well, that was handy. So she didn't have to take everything apart.
No. She didn't take...
It's like a curtain almost.
Did she just stand up here and just hold it, carry that quilt that high up in the top of the house, see, because you didn't have no electricity back in, see. And just carry it and put it up on top of the house. I'd tell her she's interested about quilting. I'd tell her about how we used to raise them up in top of the house, you know. Hang them, see, and then let them down and quilt them, and then...
Long time since I had one hung up like that.
And I'd help my mother quilt, and just quilt that shell out there and come back, you know, and do it about an inch apart. Mm-hmm. Now, my mother wasn't no design quilter. Mm-hmm. Hey, some of these women does it for looks, mm-hmm. and some of them does it because they don't have it to do. But now, my mother, she done it because she wanted something warm for us children. Now, that's what she done it for. And back then we had, my daddy would buy fertilizer in 200-pound sacks. Mm-hmm. And they come out and they was in white cotton sacks, mm-hmm, with a big Virginia Carolina VC chemical company, and had a big VC on the sack, see. Mm-hmm. And all that writing had come out except that VC. You couldn't get that stuff out of them. Mm-hmm. She'd make us shirts, and I wore them to school out of them things. Mm-hmm. Had a big VC in my back, see.
I bet you weren't the only kid.
No, sir. There's plenty of them wearing them like that. But, you know, I don't like that kind of carrying on. Now, if this is a democracy, and your kid's out there, and you're not a farmer, and your kid's out there has got good shoes and good coats and good hats and good underwear and all this stuff going to school, I think my children ought to have it. You see? You see what I'm saying? I don't like that kind of carrying on. I don't like having to wear flour sacks and gear under sacks. And I don't like a government that makes me have to do that. You see? You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I sure do.
And I reckon I can talk about this government if I want to, because I fought for it, you see. Uh-huh. And I just don't like them kind of things. Mm-hmm. And I hate to see people go a wanting when there was as much food as there was in the country in the Depression. And they let the thing get in such a shape until the people was just about starving to death for food, see. I don't like that kind of carrying on.
One thing I asked Mr. McMullen about, and I was asking him about serenading, whether he knew anything about that, and he said, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know about that.
One or two of them.
We used to go serenading on Christmas time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We'd go around and just, all of us, yeah, just a whole gang of us young people, you know. But they'd put up with more back then than they would now. People would, you know. And
well, what kind of things went into a serenade? What did you do?
Oh, we just went around to the house and hollered and singing Christmas carols and all this stuff, and go on to the next house and do the same thing.
They call it caroling now.
Yeah.
What you were doing.
Yeah.
Well, he was talking also about weddings.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'd tie cans and all that junk to them, but to the wagons and whatnot, you know. But we'd go out Christmas Eve night. We'd be out half of the night, you know, all in the community. Mm-hmm. And just have the biggest kind of time over. Mm-hmm. Cane grinders. Now, that was something that I don't want to tell you about. We cooked syrup on a kettle back then, an 80-gallon sugar kettle. And an 80-gallon sugar kettle, you'd fill it full of juice, and you'd get about 9 to 10 gallons of syrup out of that 80 gallons of juice. See? And if you got up before daylight and ground the boiling and got it on, and you'd get off 3 boilings during the daytime and leave you that night to cook, finish cooking one off that night. Well, the people would gather around and you'd build up fires and you'd grind juice and they'd drink juice and then make candy and they'd sit around the cane grinding. Mm-hmm. That was another outing for them, see? And the kids all played on the pummy pile on the old stalks that been the juice been ground out of them and had them piled out there, and they just roll and turn somersets down them pummy piles. Just have the biggest time that you ever seen in your life. Mm-hmm. And I never seen a kid that didn't like to go to a cane grinding. Mm-hmm. And even today, we got some friends that'll bring their children, even out here in the alley cane grinding when we grind, see. They want their kid to see what they was used to back on when they was kids. See? Now that's something that every young boy and every young girl ought to be allowed to go to is a cane grinding.
Did they ever do anything like musical, like singing or playing instruments?
Yeah, they used to have sayings. They'd go around to people's house and they'd have sayings. And I'll never forget one time, my daddy had a black man working for him. And they never at the table where we at. They, you know, they're segregated back then and all that stuff, you know. And he said, Mr. B said, I've got a little quartet and said, we'd come sing for you one night if you want us to. And Dad said, come on. Said, y'all come on sing. Four of them come to sing. And I'm telling you, if them black men didn't sing, you know, them old Negro spirituals and all. And from that, they just got to going around over the community, you know, singing for people. And they'd get a good supper out in the deal, and that's about all the pay they'd get, you know.
Did they ever say what kind of music they were singing? Was it like,
there wasn't no Sacred Heart music, no.
Uh-huh. No, it was just by ear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it just by ear. Half of the time you couldn't understand them, and half of the time you could. See? And they'd sing Swing Low, Sweet Cheerio. Yeah. That was one of their favorites, you know. Coming for to carry me home. I remember that just good. It was yesterday, you know. And in the cotton field, we used to have 30 and 40 black people helping us pick cotton. And some of the prettiest singing them old colored ladies would do. That you out there in that field picking cotton, you know. But now the farmer couldn't pay him with a very little bit because he wasn't getting nothing for the cotton. And a lot of people looked down on the farmer because he wasn't paying the black people all that much. But then on the other hand, the people are buying the cotton and the farmer wasn't paying that much for it.
So nobody was getting much for anything.
No, wasn't nobody getting nothing for it. About mine. My son. You got it on?
Yeah, I got it.
After I come back out of service, and I didn't know my wife when I was in service. I was at a party one night, and I met her. And she lived here in the county, and I met her, and she was raised on Grand Ridge Route mostly. Sometimes she was on Sneed Route, but Grand Ridge Route mostly. And we got married. And we've been married about 35 years. And we've never had too much problems. I've always respected and loved her, and she's always respected and loved me. But during that 35 years, we kept adding to a little bit and saving here. You can look up and tell, we ain't got no decent house. We don't have... Well, I don't care.
I just thought about something. Did you actually build your house?
Yeah, we built this house. Mm-hmm.
Did you actually do the work?
Well, me and her brother. 1952. But down through the years then, me with a ninth grade education, I run for county commissioner of this county. And I got elected. I served for 8 years on the board of county commissioners of this county. And we kind of held a tight rein on the money. We didn't raise no taxes. And I've seen things happen since I went off the board, and inflation and everything. When I left the board, there was $350,000 left up there that we had saved back, you know. And now inflation all done it all that up, and they're just about broke like every other local government is, see. And then in 77... the farmers all marched on Washington, if you remember, with the tractors and all. I was there. In 78, I was there. And they elected me state chairman of the American Agriculture Movement in Florida. And we work with that a little bit. We don't get no pay. It's a nonprofit organization, and we're just trying to see that the rural community gets a fair shot. See? And we're trying to... We formed a political action committee, something I didn't know a thing in the world about years ago, you know. Mm-hmm. And we contributed to the political action committee. And all this past election was our first time that we contributed to it, and we got 84.5% of our people elected that we contributed to. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we're going to turn this farming situation around. But I just wanted to tell you what... And I'm a DAV member, Disabled American Veteran. I'm a veteran of foreign wars, and I'm a member of the American Legion. And one thing it always bears in my mind, all the sweat, all the blood I lost, all the people that got killed in Second World War, all the pain that I've had ever since I got wounded. It always bears in my mind that I was making $60 and $70 a month when I was fighting for this country. How many millionaires and how many billionaires was made during the Second World War selling stuff to the federal government out there on my sweat? Me digging 13 foxholes in 24 hours, night and day. We taking that mess inch by inch. And how many billions of dollars did these people make in these, that own these factories and that had stock in these places that made this war material and all this stuff on the sweat of the American boys that went over and fought that war? And I have said time and time again, whatever they paid these American veterans for defending this country wasn't enough for the agony and all that they went through. However, if I had it to go with again, I'd go back again under the circumstances of the Second World War, but not under Korea, not under Vietnam. Now, I'm telling you, I don't like no such mess as Vietnam and Korea, see. I think if you're going to do a job, going out there and do it and get done with it, and come on back home. Not this, you know, 38 parallel, and not this mess of pulling out and leaving like they done then, see. And all this stuff interrupts a rural life that you're trying to find, you're trying to talk about. See, every bit of it interrupts and tear down, see. Because I got a cousin, had a cousin that got killed, had a good friend that got killed. I got wounded, got some more friends that got wounded. And out of this community, she had three or four brothers in it one time, see, and had a pair of twins, and there's more agony of that conflict, see. And when, of course, now I know the Bible's going to have to be fulfilled, because the Bible says there'll be wars and rumors of wars all over. Mm-hmm. And it says the time is not yet then, see. I know that you're going to have wars. Mm-hmm. But Lord have mercy, honey, I hate to see it. I hate to see that any young people have to go to war. And if it's going to prop up, like I said a while ago, an economy, mm-hmm. I say, let's just forget the war and go ahead and feed the people.
That's right.
See?
Do people ever use the Bible to like try to tell the future with? I mean, like, not just what's written in it. But, I mean, here's what I'm talking about. I've heard of people saying that, you know, when you don't feel right, or you're wanting to know what's going to happen, if you just open the Bible and let it fall open, that
no.
Be able to, you know, that there'd be something in there that would give you it.
Anytime you read the Bible, it's good reading, uh-huh. You know. Now, I don't know about your religion or nothing. And none of my business. But I believe that Bible is the authentic word of God. Mm-hmm. See, that's what it says it is. Mm-hmm. And if you add to it or take away from it, you're going to be doomed. See, mm-hmm. That you're not supposed to add to or take away. Mm-hmm. And I believe what the Bible says. I believe that you're going to have plenty of wars. I believe that the country that stays close to Israel, since Israel, the Jews is going back to Israel, is going to be favored in the eyes of God. I think America, and I tell my congressmen, I tell my senators, I think that we ought to support Israel. We ought to help Israel in every way that we possibly can. I don't think that we should down the Jews. I think that they've been downed enough. You follow what I'm saying?
Quit being down on them.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I don't, the people, now there's a lot of people that looks at the Bible different than me, but I ain't never heard of one that just opened the Bible and said, well, that's what's going to happen so and so. I never heard that though.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't believe in using no rattlesnakes.
Yeah, I heard about people using rattlesnakes.
I don't believe in that. No, no.
Nobody does that.
I know, sir. No.
But every so often you hear about somebody that they try to handle snakes as a proof that
that God will protect them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just keep wondering,
What, are you Catholic?
No.
You're not. Well, you do have a lot of Catholics up around, up through there, don't you?
Oh, there are a lot of Catholics up in Connecticut?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Peckham, the guy that I'll tell you about,
he was. Italian.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What else you don't know, Matt? Have I told you? I don't know what.
A whole lot of stuff.
Huh?
You've told me a whole lot of things.
Always coming in more.
Uh huh. This takes just about to run out of it.